Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
So hello, everybody, and welcome to today's episode of the Chakraway Meditation Podcast. Today, I'm joined by, he gave me permission to introduce him however he wanted me to. So I'm going to say I'm looking at a really overenthusiastic, like, puppy dog of a man.
That works for me.
I'm not expecting that. So I'm talking to Di Manuel. Sorry, I've really butchered your name there. Di, which is a Welsh name, Manuel, Portuguese. Yes. But a dude from Vancouver is the bottom line. So welcome, Di. Thanks for joining me today.
Oh, thank you, Roseanne. You know, it's great to be here. I know it's been, let's just say it's been a labor of effort.
To get us,
my life's been just all over, but I feel so good that we're finally connected, you know.
It's great, it's really good, right. and your energy is so infectious, and I kind of feel like this is your MO, this is what you do, is you are Mr. Energy Infectious Guy, and you go out there and you share this with as many people as you possibly can, which is wonderful, it's beautiful. But when I look at your, you know, what you do, there's a fantastic bedrock of something that everybody can relate to, which is, you know, you said you're a dad and you've been dating your wife for 23 years. So you dig your wife, which is pretty cool. Most women want to hear that. So, but what do you actually do, Di? What do you actually do?
You know, there's always it's one of those big questions that we often get, right? It's like, what do you do? And sure, you know, at different phases in my life, I'd have a stock answer, right? The elevator pitch, right? Like, what can you describe yourself as in 30 seconds? And I realize, you know, just as life has sort of brought me down some different paths, certain things, especially around titling, it just became something that I found it was always peg-holing me into something that really didn't feel like the perfect fit. You know, and so why I'm saying all this is when I'm asked what I do, it's really whatever I feel like I want to do. And sorry, that sounds really vague and cryptic. But what I mean by that is my wife and I, we went through a shift, you know, about 14 years ago. And it was huge for me because I did a TEDx talk where I actually shared about my struggles with alcohol. And you know, it was a big crutch in my life that was there for about 15 years, you know, from my late teens into my early 30s. And it was just always present. It was a way of coping and escaping and just really distracting myself from what I believed were the big stressors and anxieties of my life, you know. And it was tough. Because during that time, I also scaled a business with a business partner to 8 figures a year and had my 2 children, you know, met my wife. I did some pretty big milestones in my life happened during that 15 years with alcohol very present. Yeah. And it always felt a bit out of alignment, you know, like a little bit of a, as they say, you know, that imposter syndrome, because most of my career for the last 30 years has been in the health and wellness industries. And I support people with change. But my business I had before for 17 years was in the retail space, omni-channel. So it was online sales and brick and mortar sales and B2B business, like corporate, government, military, that kind of sales as well. So when people needed fitness equipment, they would often source it from our company. And I loved it. I really loved the space. But when you go through a big personal change, and I call it sort of the midlife crisis, you know, I came to a realization after my wife asked me a question, and she just simply said, "Di, are you being the type of man that you would want to marry your daughters?"
That's and a good that question. Time,
it was the question.
Yeah,
it was. It changed everything for me. So, you know, had we met 14 years ago and had the same conversation and you asked me, "Well, what do you do?" I would have had a very stock answer. But ever since then, really, what do I do now? I try to show up as that man, you know, that modeled man, you know, being a man who identifies as a man. So again, I know language is important on this part, but as a man who identifies as a man and has a life like that, with that intention, you know, now it's all about, am I doing the things that best role model and mentor, you know, because modeling and mentorship are really the two ways we all learn or teach. Am I being that guy? Am I being an excellent example of, you know, me? So I can honestly say, yeah, I'm being the guy that I would love my daughters to end up with a guy like me, you know? And so everything I do is under that sort of I don't want to say theme, but maybe that filters through which I pass things.
Yeah.
And really I just help people change both personally and professionally. And that's what I do, you know?
Yeah. It's really interesting because, you know, to look at your, you know, I scrolled back through your Instagram and so on. And there's lots of pictures of, you know, the fitness aspect of your life is obviously very big. Great, you know, everybody needs to be fit. You know, we get a lot of mental health, you know, benefits from being physically fit. So that's a kind of, you know, ground zero. That's an absolute basic, which is fantastic. But what I'm hearing is like you are you have made a conscious decision to be the best version of yourself that you can be. In order to model that to your daughter as like, this is what a real man or what a good man is like. So where did you get your sort of groundworks for that? Like, where's your model for that?
That's a really good question. And to be fair, at the time, I struggled because I was just doing what every other guy was doing in my sphere. You know, when I think about the people I was around all the time, you know, the term vulnerability was not something that we saw as being positive. It was negative. You know, it was like, you know, communicating your emotions. No, unless it's anger. Obviously, you can show anger, but that was pretty much it. You know, everything else is just sort of even keel. And again, that's just what was being modeled with the people I was hanging out with. But there was also some other habits and behaviors that never felt aligned with me, but yet I would continue to do it because it's, again, it was normal. That was the normal thing to do in that group. And what I mean by that is, yeah, we'd go watch UFC at the pub, you know, go watch the fights. And, you know, we get a few rounds in and, you know, the conversations just start bagging about our wives. You know, or talking about our kids, maybe not in a positive light. You know, like I found that the conversation would often go to somewhere negative, sort of venting session, if you will. But also, it was very surface. You know, I didn't feel like there was a lot of depth to the conversation. It's not very much connection. But that was normal and it was okay. And we would drink and it didn't matter. And we'd mute our phones or turn them off so we could tell our wives, "Oh man, my phone died. Sorry, honey, I lost track of time." You know, like just these interesting things that I never believed that's who I was. And those weren't things that I valued. In fact, I wanted to do the opposite. But yet I found myself constantly doing these things that was directly contradictory to the kind of person I did feel that I was always, that I was, but also continuing to evolve into. And that creates a lot of internal strife. You know, lots of us can relate to that, you know, in different ways. And it was really challenging, very challenging. But when I removed the alcohol, because it started as a 1-year commitment to not have any alcohol, which would have been the longest stint of not drinking I had ever done since age 17. You know, putting this in context again, I was 32 at the time when I made this commitment. And I learned very quickly, I needed help. And this is where the vulnerability piece comes in, because up to that point, I never asked for help. In fact, I was the opposite. I was the guy, I'll figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
I'll do it myself because I can do it best. You know, like I'd get frustrated if I had other people to try to help. And like, this is a real issue with me trying to develop my leadership skills, especially early on in my professional career, because I wasn't very, very good at asking for help. You know, I thought it would be a weakness or I'd be judged, you know, as someone that doesn't have his stuff together. Yeah.
It's common with men, I think.
I think you're right. I think you're right.
Yeah. That's so nice.
And so, yeah. Anyways, I'll just cut the story short, but ultimately got to a place where I realized, you know, I needed some support, some help to really create the space to explore, well, what kind of man do I want to be? Not only for my girls and for my communities, for my coworkers, you know, but for me. And by removing the alcohol, I realized that is a big question and one I'm not too sure on how to answer right now. And so it was what started a 1-year journey of really going inward, you know, a lot of introspection, a lot of tough questions. And I also found a psychiatrist I worked with for 4.5 months, found a relationships counselor that helped me with my communication skills. I basically went all in.
You did.
On the inner work.
Yeah.
You know?
So many people need, I mean, this is wonderful stuff. Like, I love it when people just make that conscious decision, and it kind of does have to be a conscious decision to just go, okay, things aren't great, so what is it? And a lot of people look outwards for a support, a coping mechanism, and quite often that coping mechanism is a numbing thing. So like drink or drugs or sex or, you know, gambling, whatever it is.
Whatever
the vice is. But we go outwards looking for it. But if we can go outwards and actually be vulnerable and help and go, actually, I don't know what I'm doing, and I do need help, and I need some direction. There is such strength in being able to do that, especially for a guy. I think that it takes a lot. And I think that there's a lot of people who don't do it because they're scared that they'll be judged, or they're scared that it'll be too much hard work or challenging, or, you know, something not pleasant. And it's much easier to stay in your comfort zone, isn't it, than...
Absolutely. It's easy to get into that normal sort of autopilot mode, right? Where it's just day in, day out. I always laugh at that old Bill Murray movie, Groundhog's Day, right? Like, we just sort of get into this habit. It's wash, rinse, repeat. And a lot of the habits are just normalized. And the problem is we're also normalizing things that we don't value, you know, but yet it's just part of my life. And making that conscious decision to say, no, I want to move away from this to move into something new or something that feels more aligned with what's important to me. That is, it's daunting, because when you start to ask that question, you really start to do the introspection like I did, you know, going through that period, that year, I realized that this path that I'd been on, you know, this professional career path, I started to question, well, why am I actually on this path? You know, and it was in my mind, well, I'm a partner of this company that we've built, and we're scaling and we're continuing to grow. And I just thought, this is where I'm meant to be for the rest of my life, you know, professionally speaking. And you start doing that introspective work and you start to realize that maybe what you thought was the path is no longer the path that you actually feel drawn to live or to walk, you know? And for me, it was like, I don't feel fulfilled doing what I'm doing now. You know, and that was daunting too, because ultimately it led to me leaving a career of 17 years, you know, and a month after that, my wife quit hers and we pulled the kids out of school 3 months after that and gave away our stuff, packed up the SUV and went traveling, you know, with no plan. We didn't do it well, but we did it anyways. And we just started traveling and we literally traveled for about 5 years, 2.5 years. We lived in Bali, Indonesia, of all places, you know, like. It was amazing what happened when you start to lean into that kind of work and you start to really allow yourself to start to envision the life that you truly have always wanted, but maybe had been too intimidated or afraid or concerned that either judgment, you know, or fear of failure, or, you know, there's lots of reasons we can tell ourselves why we shouldn't do something. But if we took just, you know, half as much energy and went into the reasoning of, well, why could I do it? You start to realize, you know, the only limiting factor is typically ourselves.
Yeah. And then this sort of brings us back, you know, everything that you're saying is really interesting when you underlie it with the word of vulnerability, when you underlie, because vulnerability underlies all of that. I mean, leaving your business, selling, you know, packing up your stuff, getting on a plane with no real plan of what you're going to do is leaving yourself pretty damn vulnerable, right? I mean, that is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was a little crazy that some of the comments that we would get were rather entertaining from the standpoint. It's just people just, oh, that's great for you guys. I could never do that. You know, like just that was like the stock answer I would often get. Oh, that sounds so awesome, but I could never do that. You know, and I would often say, well, why not? Like, why are you limiting yourself from that, you know, from this one specific thing? Or like, because my feeling is that we probably limit ourselves in other areas the same way. You know, there's that old adage, you know, the way we do anything is the way we do everything. And I find that it is very true for most part, you know, the way we approach certain challenges or opportunities, there's a process that we normalize, you know, and we have to ask ourselves, well, if we're not getting the results that we want, maybe we should look at how we got to the result, period, because there might be something there to explore, to get a little bit clearer on and to identify, maybe we do something different. Like I see people all the time in the fitness space, you know, and I have even some really close friends and it's like, yeah, I run every day. And yet I'm not losing weight. I'm like, are you asking a question here? Or are you just making a statement? Like, are you asking for some input? Or are you asking to talk about this or some help or some, you know, like, because I'll see people do the same thing over and over expecting certain results. And yet those results don't come. I mean, Einstein had a definition of what that means, right?
Yeah,
and
I was about to say.
but when do you finally say, okay, enough's enough. Maybe I should do something different.
How do you get to that space? Because I think there's a lot of people out there going, I wish I could do it. And I wish I could pack up my family or my business or whatever and just go get in a camper van and do what you've done, or something equally, you know, just move to a different part of the world, or just quit their 9 to 5, which is draining them of everything. And they'll be like, well, because I don't have any savings, or because I don't know how I'd make any money, or I don't know how I'd survive. Is that been your experience when people say, I couldn't do that? And you go, why? They say, is it those kind of, I can't survive things?
That is very common. It is very common, but it's also, you know, depending on where people are at in their stages of life, like I find that there's just a lot of excuses. You know, like they're very quick to come to those answers. And I'm like, well, how did you come to that answer? Why so quickly? Like, it's one thing to say, well, I don't have the finances. Okay, fair enough. But have you ever considered what would be the number that you would need to feel comfortable and confident that you could do that? Yeah. Is that even an option? Would you even want to entertain yourself with that idea? You know, because we're so quick to get to the answer of no, or to really justify that underlying belief that I could never do that, you know, and here's why. And I find often it's just excuses, you know, they're not founded in reality. And what I mean by that is like, it's just, we haven't done the work to try to formulate a plan to even possibly do it. You know, we're just quick to say no. And, you know, what really got me very aware of this in myself was I was turned on to a book called The Five Regrets of the Dying. by Bronnie Ware. You're familiar with that?
I don't, but just the title, I'm like, yeah, I'm in.
I think you and anybody watching and listening to this, you'll love it. She's got a great TED Talk. So you can just watch the TED Talk if you want. It sort of summarizes what the book talks about. But I'll give you sort of the short version here. It's, you know, here's this woman that was an RN, and she took it upon herself to make people comfortable at end of life. That's what she really specialized in, you know, sort of like hospice type settings. Yeah. And I mean, that is a heck of a journey, you know, for anybody, because it's that final journey that we often have to take on our own. And it's very lonely. And I remember my dad going through it with his cancer. And it, I mean, that 10 days in the hospice was awful, you know, for everybody involved, but especially my dad. I just remember him just sort of, he woke up, you know, they had him, he was in a lot of pain with his pancreatic cancer. And remember they sort of knocked him out, just keeping him really his pain control. So he, I remember him coming out of a nap and waking up and like, oh, I'm still here. you know, like my dad was pretty funny, but it was kind of tongue in cheek with that, but it was, you know, people are just there waiting. And so here you get people at this end of life stage, often on their own. You have this wonderful nurse that has a great bedside manner that really just wants to get to know people. And she would often ask a singular question. Is there anything you regret not doing with your life? And she started to document the answers she got. And the majority of all the answers she got from every single person she'd ask would have the answer of 1 to 5. You know, there was any one, maybe just one of those basically very common people had multiple, okay, regrets. But she found that it was always the same 5.
Okay.
You know, that would be regurgitated again and again and again. And she's like, okay, well, this is crazy. There's obviously something to this. But one of them, which always sticks in my mind, is, you know, I wish I'd lived the life I wanted to live, not the life I believed others expected of me. Oh yeah. That was my feeling too. When I heard that one, I was like, oh gosh. And so, you know, to put things into focus right now and what I've already shared as far as path that I've been following, you know, I realized that path that I'd been on for 17 years, building a company and working in a certain sales environment and believing that that was what I was meant to be doing. You know, I started questioning, well, why did I even get into this to begin with?
Yeah.
You know, like, was this something I always wanted to do? Well, not really. I just sort of happened into it and it just became a career. And but then you start to think, well, there's other people that I'm responsible for now, and you know, maybe I should stay here because, you know, my family and our safety, that consistency with income, like, I mean, there's all these variables that we just don't know if we make a change. But I'll just tell you, short answer, I don't want to be on my deathbed, you know, whenever that happens, and thinking, gosh, you know, that time when I could have left that career and, you know, experience life as a full-time family, showing our kids the world. Man, I really wish I did that.
Yeah.
You know, well, I wasn't willing to do that, you know? No. So.
Yeah. Okay. You know, so we have this very clear issue that I think so many people will be able to identify with, is that you've landed into life. You've been pushed through the system of school where they go, right, what's your career? Let's do something sensible, you know, be a doctor, get a, you know, a profession, get a skill, whatever. And you go, okay, that's obviously what I'm supposed to do, because society, authority figures, my family, culture have told me this is what I need to do in order to be successful and to be happy with any, you know, that's what we're told. And you've got yourself into this position, and you're then feel like you're like, you wake up 10 years later and you go, holy crap, I'm just on a hamster wheel here. And I'm just doing things because I've got to. The alarm goes off at 6:30 every morning, and I drag myself out of bed going, God, the weekend can't come soon enough. And then at the weekend, I'm just going to go out drinking with the lads, or I'm going to go and, you know, get my nails done, or just like have a moment that's just for me, and then I'll just do it all over again, and then I'll meet somebody and then I'll have kids, and then I'm really stuck in it. I mean, like, this is everybody's story, right? So
yeah, it is.
So what is it that will give people the freedom to go, actually, I want out of this rat race moment, this hamster wheel? Like, it's what is it that can get you from that point to being where you got to? Because you went through a big change. You were like, okay, alcohol's a problem in my life. I'm going to cut that out. I'm going to do the work. And now, aha, I see there is more to life than just this stuff that I'm doing. And brilliant, I'm off. I'm no regrets guy. Woohoo. But it's, and everybody that's listening is going, yeah, it's not that simple. You're like, how do I get to that place? What's your advice?
Well, I think, you know, love how you painted the picture, by the way, because it's like, oh yeah, that's exactly as it was, you know? And I know all of us can be nodding right now, just saying, yep. And what it really boils down to is lack of clarity. Right. And because when we don't have clarity, we tend to not feel very confident, you know, and just our choices, the actions that we follow the choices with. Like we just, it's really hard to confidently move forward when we're not confident that this path that we're going down is actually the path we're meant to be on, or it may not even be that clear to us. You know, we feel like we're bushwhacking, you know, like the first ones on this trail. And what happens is, and I ask people, just think about this in your own life. You know, when you felt really, really clear about something, how did your confidence feel around that thing? And inevitably people always say, well, I felt really confident. I was really sure of myself, you know, to at least take that first action step or that first, just take that first step in that journey, so to speak. And you end up procrastinating less, which is a nice byproduct of this whole idea of clarity and confidence. Because when we're not feeling clear, we're not feeling confident, and we're unsure about the next steps, we do find ways of using that time. Yeah, or maybe, as you said earlier, that numbing effect, and we can numb ourselves with binge watching Netflix. And believe me, I'm not here to vilify or speak negatively. I mean, I do that too, all right? But, you know, if that becomes the normal and it's an everyday thing and it's holding you back from really leaning into the things that you've always identified as being something that you wanted, but maybe convinced yourself that it's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And then you create excuses to justify that, to prove to yourself, you know, those confirmation biases are real, right? Like we're there. We want to, because it makes us feel better if we can justify the why nots.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, hey, take half as much energy and apply it to the why, you know, like why you can and why you will and why you will do this. And so with this, there's three questions I think can really support people with starting this process. The first question, can I do this? Because it doesn't matter what we're talking about. We're talking about some pretty big change here, potentially, you know, change to whatever the normal is to becoming some new normal, but you got to bridge the gap and it's going to involve a bit of a leap. It's also going to involve a little bit of vulnerability, right? You're going to have to get honest with yourself, get really clear and be okay. This is just a process of sort of working through the possibilities. It doesn't mean that you're quitting your job tomorrow. Okay. I mean, maybe it does. Good on you. It was an 18-month process to get to the place where I finally decided I was going to leave this career of 17 years, you know, 18 months. All right. Like it wasn't like I thought, this is a good idea. It was like, it was an inkling of an idea, but I had to explore it. I had to get to a place where I really wanted it, you know, and I felt confident that moving forward was the best option for me and really something I wouldn't regret, you know, doing. Yeah. And so that first question is wonderful because it identifies some gaps in our knowledge. You know, can I do this? Can I do this change? Can I make this shift? Can I leave a career of 17 years? Like, really, can I do that? I mean, of course I can, but what are the ramifications? You know, as a teenager, just as an example, I was morbidly obese. You know, up until the age. And that's why fitness is such a big part of my life, because it helped me with this initial transformation I went through from age 15 to 17. And it changed the trajectory of my life, you know, was by getting healthy, going from morbidly obese to a healthier state of body and mind and spirit. Right. And it was a valuable lesson to pick up early on. And but I remember thinking to myself, can I actually get healthy? You know, as a 15-year-old boy, morbidly obese, dealing with a lot of mental health challenges that came with that, you know, can I get healthy? I mean, I wasn't really sure if I could. But I knew that if I could educate myself on ways to get healthy, I'd start to feel more confident to potentially find a yes to that answer, you know, because I recognized it was a knowledge thing. I just didn't know what to do or how to do it.
Yeah.
So when we ask ourselves, can I do this? It is going to identify the knowledge gap.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to go and do some education, do some exercises. Maybe you work with a coach, maybe you find a mentor. You know, like I wouldn't recommend talking to your parents because they are probably more traditional and they may not be open to these kind of changes because it's not something that they would have done, you know? Yeah. So finding people that maybe have already done it or are currently doing it or are just more experienced with what it is that you yourself have identified you want to do. So you got to get to a yes on question one.
Yeah.
Can I do this? And then now you've got the yes.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Now you go to question two. And it's like, okay, if I do this, will it work? Right? Like, I remember, you know, being at War Beast team, like, being like, okay, well, if I start moving my body, start exercising, I actually change on what I eat, because I've been reading all these books on nutrition, I've been reading the magazines, looking at people that go from working out to now being healthy, and it's like, wow, clearly it works for them, so I think it's going to work for me. So yeah, can I do this? Yeah, I think I can do this. But if I actually go through all this effort, like, is the result actually going to happen? Will I really be healthy? Because how many of us have done these sorts of things or made certain commitments to these things and then maybe not got the result that we wanted?
Yeah.
And I mean, the more that's happened to us in our lives, we start to believe that maybe this just isn't meant to be.
Yeah.
You know,
maybe I've had short-term results only then to slide back. Again. That's the commonest thing.
Yes. Thank you. That's a great way to put it. So, you know, if I do this, will it work? Fortunately for me at the time when I was doing a lot of this research, and the same with, you know, making this transition to become a nomadic family, traveling the world together, you know, from a family that was very stable, had a full community and life in Vancouver, you know, like it's a big, big change, you know, and we're like, well, if we do this, will it work? Like, can we actually make this work for us as a family? And that's what we started to look for others that were already doing it.
Yeah.
Because it builds our own belief. Oh, well, they did it. I mean, look at that family. I mean, goodness, they're doing it. They got like four kids and they're doing this. I'm like, we only got two, thank goodness. You know, like, yeah, we can do this.
Yeah, and, exactly.
Because it builds the belief, right?
Yeah.
And again, clarity builds confidence. Confidence also allows us to take action and delay less.
Yeah.
Right? So you got to get to a yes and a yes.
Mm.
Now's the big question. Is it worth it? You know, when I'm talking to teams or organizations, I can use the term it. But when I'm talking to people just like you and I, and the people that are listening to this or watching this right now, it's like you have to get really, really clear with yourself. Look in the mirror and say, hey, am I worth it?
Mm.
That one's not easy to answer.
Yeah.
You know, as that, when I was overweight and at my worst at age 15, you know, I avoided the mirror.
Mm.
I avoided photos. I mean, there's only a couple photos of me I can even prove to people that I was in that state, because I avoided social settings. I was extremely introverted, dealt with social anxiety, because I always thought people were judging or mocking or ridiculing me. Mm. You know, that's just what I believed was going on around me. I believed everybody was always talking about me negatively. You know, that was, again, teenage boy. That's just where I was.
Mm.
And, you know, am I worth it? I'll tell you, at that time, I couldn't have honestly said I was.
Yeah.
But this is where the follow-up to that comes. It's like, who do I need to get around, you know, to support me with doing it, you know, making that change? Because if I don't think I'm worth it, I bet you there's other people out there that have felt the same way at some point in time. There's people that are making those changes. Like, who can I get around that can help me with this? And that identified community and finding people that would support me with some of the things I wanted to make changes around, you know, and it's empowering to find a great community, you know, like people that are a few steps ahead.
The foundation of everything. And I'm gonna have to, because this is what I do, I'm gonna have to bring everything back to chakras, because, you know, meditate chakra way and all of that.
Yes.
But what you're talking about there is this foundational root energy of the root chakra, which is your family, is the foundation of everything, your community. And it's not just your birth family, although that's obviously important, but your community is the thing that gives you the stability, that allows you to hold boundaries, that keeps you safe and in survival mode. And that's what, you know, if without that, without community, I think that's absolutely key. And I think this, you know, there's a lot of things said about social media, the evils of social media, but actually, if you're smart about it, the support and the groups and the wonderful people that are there on social media for you to find and to become a part of that little gang of people who understand this or talk about that, or, you know, there are tons of people out there that you can use now to identify, you know, like, I followed that, you probably do too, the Bucket List family. Amazing. I've been following them for years, and they've done exactly what you did, but like probably X10, you know, they've been doing it for years and years. And
they built a whole business around it. Actually, it was funny because they had started in on theirs maybe 8 or 9 months before we set out. You know, because we set out back in 2015, like that's when we first went out on our 5-year adventure. And they were right around that time building. He had transitioned, sold his business, and was just starting to lean into that. So my wife specifically, you know, used them and what they were doing as just that inspiration for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But then again, it did help that he sold his business for several million, and, you know,
lots. He had.
Let's discount that. But what I'm getting at is that online, there is community out there. There is inspiration out there for everybody and anybody. And that is wonderful. And then the other thing that you were saying, I just want to take you back to what you were saying about finding this clarity. Because for me, when you say that, you know, finding that clarity will give you confidence. For me, clarity is all about third eye. It's all about listening to and trusting your intuition. Because when you know, you know, and there's like, it's not like anything that needs to be discussed or even like no pros and cons list required, because you know it. And that's where what you're talking about, doing this inner work, doing this soul search in whichever direction and whatever modality. And this is why I love talking to people like you, because, you know, you're not some kind of spiritual guru type person. You're just like a dude who's done this. And I think what my purpose here with this podcast and talking to everybody is to find examples of people who have managed to change their lives, who've managed to kind of create this life that they want through doing a little bit of soul, so a little bit of work. They doesn't have to be spiritual, it doesn't have to be woo-woo. It can just be straightforward. Actually, I got my shit together and I and I changed my life. And you don't have, doesn't have to be, you know, like, oh, you know, I went and meditated in the desert for, you know, however long, and then I had a vision, or I went to work with a shaman who, you know, wafted some smoke over me and my life changed. Like, there's a really straightforward human way of facilitating change. And you are a really great example of that.
Thank you. Thank you. It's, I can honestly say that now in retrospect. I appreciate that comment, but I'll tell you, when you're going through it at times, especially going through big change, there really isn't much that's easy about it, you know, like, especially if it starts to really challenge that foundational belief system, you know, like just, I had that belief that, no, I find a great career and I stay in that career, right? Like this is it. And I grow up and I retire doing this thing. And I know that's being challenged. It might be older way of thinking, but that's what I was modeled through my parents. I'm still of that generation where my parents had a career. They had that whole career of their entire lives, right?
Yeah, and stay with the company until retirement. Yeah. Goals. See you later, bye times. Yeah, absolutely.
Totally. And that was still what I was aware of. So, you know, to have a paradigm shift is like what we're talking about here, like a complete shift of aligning our life or realigning our life, I think is probably a better way of putting it, to the values that we pride, you know. And when I say pride, I mean, it's the ones that you are not willing to negotiate on. You were mentioning the boundaries idea. Yes. Thank you. Thank you.
Heart needs and desires of the soul, of the spirit.
Yes.
It's getting in touch with that, and then listening to the old intuition. But what I want to ask you is, like, on a daily basis, okay, so you've done the whole overarching thing of the change, the adventure, the whole thing, and you had to wake up every morning and go, okay, here we go again. Like, this is it, right? So how am I going to do? So on a daily basis, what were your coping mechanisms? Because obviously the drink wasn't there for you. I mean, you've never got any carried on drinking, but like your daily coping mechanisms, like you'd wake up in the morning and you go, okay, so today I've got to do whatever. And, you know, we're traveling, we're moving, we're selling, we're, you know, but how did you deal? What were your coping mechanisms on a daily basis?
Well, a big one for me has always been my fitness.
Yeah.
You know, so working my body with intentions, or as I say, moving your body it's intentional movement every day. And what I mean by that is it's movement that's going to elicit a positive adaptation in your health. Mm-hmm. It might elevate your heart rate. So we call that cardiovascular training, right? Where we might go up for a run, a jog, a hike, go for a swim. I mean, whatever it is, but that gets the pulmonary system moving. Yes. Yoga. Thank you. And I'll tell you, it's like the hardest one. it gets the heart rate going really well, especially if you're doing something like in hot yoga, right? But yoga is, again, another example. But you're moving your body with this in very clear intention, and it's to improve your health and well-being. And so every day I would always carve out time for me, you know, and it was a non-negotiable. My fitness is a big thing because I know I show up as the version of the person I want to be more frequently and with less resistance when I've got fitness happening regularly. Like, I just, my mental health's in a better place. I feel better. I feel more present. I feel engaged. I know me well enough that if I'm doing that consistently, I show up as my better version, you know?
Yeah.
So that was a non-negotiable that was consistent. And just a quick note, though, like, I'm not so picky that I prescribe that this is how I do that every day. You know, I know some people are very ritualistic when they try to create their morning routines or rituals, but I've personally found that can be problematic at times because our lives change and the things in our life change. But also you start to feel like you're failing sometimes.
Yeah.
Because life is going to throw you off. Yeah. And if we're quick to prescribe things as doing them a certain way, like I remember often I get clients, it's like, well, if I can't go to the gym at least 4 times a week, I mean, why bother? Like, what are you talking about? You know, like, that's the wrong attitude. But it's because they believe that's what I used to do in the past, and this is what gave me my results. So if I can't do at least that, I probably won't get the results. So why bother? You know, and that's sort of back to that question too, right? If I do this, is it actually going to work? We have to feel confidence that the actions are going to at least bring us closer to the results that we've identified we want. Because that's intrinsic and extrinsic motivators, right? Yeah. Sorry. I didn't mean to talk over you.
No, it's okay. Yeah. I'm just aware that time is pressing and I have a couple more questions.
Oh my goodness. I didn't even realize what time it was.
It's flying so far. It's good. Listen, the question I want to ask you is the same question. Like, how did you cope on a daily basis? How did your wife deal with the change? What was her coping mechanism?
For my wife, she still, you know, community and connection is a big one with my wife. And but also the kids at that time were still pretty young, you know, like they were barely 10 years old each. You know, our youngest, I think, was 8 at the time. Or was she 9? Yeah, it would have been 11. Yeah, 9 and 11, where it was the age of our daughters at the time when we went off on this adventure. But my wife, her big thing is connection. So her family's all over the place. You know, she has some family in California. She has Northern British Columbia. That's the province that we live in. You know, she has family up there. She has family out east. And she comes, you know, she has five other siblings. And then, you know, all the uncles and the aunts. Like, she's got a huge family. I had a very small family. She's got a huge family. And but her staying connected with them, and even just the little exchanges in the day through messaging, you know, or sharing of photos and videos. That was something that was very grounding for her. But even though we're off on this whirlwind adventure, lots of new things coming our way, a lot of big question marks every day, like, where are we sleeping tonight? You know, like, you know, there's things like that would come up. And that little connection piece definitely solidified our, listen, we have to feel safe. You know, feeling safe is an important thing. You know, I think of Maslow's hierarchy of needs as an example, right? Like, what's on the very base there? It's like basic survival needs we need first and foremost. I mean, you want to be self-actualized, you know, and all that. But if you don't have the foundation set, it's really hard to focus on anything above that. And so for my wife, also knowing that, hey, if stuff goes south, you know, if things go completely wrong, we have a family that care about us. That love us.
Support system. Again, reach out to us. Yes. Yeah. You've got that foundation. You've got that community that will hold you.
Correct.
So valuable. So precious.
And that was hers. That was her coping mechanism. You know, she did a lot of that. And she also journals a ton. Like, that was a big thing for her. Just organizing her thoughts every day. Just sort of getting anything that's coming up on her mind. And she's really good with that stuff. She's very... methodical.
that's really interesting, and it's a very beautiful way to cope, actually, because you know, no man is an island and all of that, and all women.
Yeah, right.
so I'm going to bring you back to something you said right at the very beginning, I said it, but I know it's one of your things, and I just want to touch on it really quickly because I find it interesting. You say you're still dating your wife after 23 years, which is so romantic and so lovely. And I'm imagining that you are just a very gorgeous, loving, you know, making an effort kind of man. So let's just give some words of advice and encouragement for all the girls out there to go listen to this guy, and for all the guys out there to go, maybe I could do better.
Well, language is important, right? Language, but specifically the language that we use to speak to ourselves every day when no one else is around. Like, it's just language. It's probably because also I went to school for English Lit and philosophy. But I ended up in fitness, like most of us, you know, with those kind of degrees. It's like teacher or lawyer. I'm like, no, fitness. Yeah. But anyways, you know, so I'm a stickler with language. And when we really look at this whole relationship piece, like, my wife and I have gone through so much in the last 23 years together, like so much, like it's crazy. Like, every once in a while we sit around, we just try to articulate back and forth. Well, let's just recap our lives together. You know, it's a fun exercise to do. You know, if you're out for dinner together, it's like, let's go from day one to where we are now. Let's just think about all those big milestones. And it was huge. It's huge when we go through that list. And it's like, holy smokes, we have grown a lot. Yeah. And we both know that we're very different people today than we were 23 years ago when we first met.
Yeah, of course.
And along the way, we've also changed a lot. And if we didn't intentionally set time and prioritize that non-negotiable time for us to continuously date and rediscover the people that we're becoming, we'd be robbing ourselves of the opportunity to continuously fall in love again and again. And so dating my wife is very intentional, you know, and the way we do this, and I talked about this idea of trying not to be too prescriptive, but this has worked for us. It's non-negotiable every Saturday night from 5 to 11. It's blocked out on our calendars. It is non-negotiable. It's on both of our calendars, so there's no excuses. We know Saturday night from 5 to 11 is our time together. We don't prescribe what we're going to do on those nights. And actually, we take turns every other week. I'll plan the night. She'll plan the next week's night, you know, and we alternate it back and forth. But we know no matter what goes on through the chaos of the week and all of our lives, and, you know, just stuff happens. We're both working, you know, we got our kids, we got friends, we got family. Like, it just, life is full, you know, as it should be, because we want to fill it. Yeah. But we know we're always going to have Saturday night together to connect. Mm. And it's really been instrumental in our relationship. And it didn't always start that way. It was something that we sort of came to, especially after I went through that big change and moving away from alcohol, like basically saying no to booze so I could say yes to the life I'd always wanted, and during that process, this is where we really got clear on some of the intentions we want with our relationship. And that was one of them, you know, to always be dating.
So beautiful that, and because it's so goddamn simple. It's like
it is.
You know, there's no secret, you know, it's just understanding that concept that if you want a long-term marriage, you know you're all going to change, and to actually keep, you know, and it's so easy to lose that, just go, oh, you're just there, you're just there, you're just there, and like, let's just watch telly, let's just do it. And actually to keep that conversation alive, to have conversations that aren't just about the kids or the admin or the bills, but to actually go, what is interesting you today? What is, it's big work. It's big work, big heart chakra stuff where you've got a big heart die. And I'm so grateful to you for spending time today. Listen, tell people how they can get in touch with you if they want to reach out and get a little bit of your energy.
Well, thank you. First and foremost, it's been an honor to be here today. And you know, before I share that, I just want to acknowledge you, because what you're doing and what you're creating, I know it's not easy. It takes a lot of energy, a lot of resources, especially time, to constantly create and to put this kind of platform out to the world, so all of us out there can be little flies on the wall to listen in on these great conversations and learn, right, and grow and experience life on a wavelength that we thought wasn't possible before, you know, and I just got to commend you for that. Thank you. And it's been an honor being here today. It's been so cool. And listen, if people want to have a conversation with me, I'm really easy to get a hold of. That's one thing about having a unique name. I'm pretty easy to find. If you can spell it right, you're going to find me. No problem. You know, and Dai's Dai. Manuel is Manuel. All right. And if you can type that into any search function, whether it's Google search engines or any social platform, you'll find me.
Yeah.
I'm most active on LinkedIn and Instagram. Those are my two primary platforms, though, because I also recognize I work with a lot of CEOs, high performers, business owners. They often shy away from social, but they're on LinkedIn. So
LinkedIn. You know, that's the one social LinkedIn that I'm not on. And I just don't understand it at all. But I really
we should have a talk.
Yeah,
we'll have a talk. Yeah, you'd be great on LinkedIn. They need you. Trust me, they need you.
Okay. All right. Yeah. This is the conversation for later. In the meantime, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, it's been amazing. I really appreciate it.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.